I've asked JC Ballers in the back to talk for just a few minutes before we start. He's spoken at a few of our EzraTap Benson Society meetings, and we might have him do a presentation here in the future on a topic he's been researching, which is Lost Tribes and the Book of Mormon. So I wanted him to just speak for a few minutes about that, just to kind of introduce everyone to the topic. And if you're interested, he does have a DVD. You can learn more about that topic.
We're doing it beforehand. Yeah. All right. Hey, everybody. Some of you may recognize me from, I do LDSLiberty.org. Love liberty. Love the restored gospel. So I've been a little quiet on that front lately because I've been wholly absorbed in the research that I've been doing. Turns out that the entire Christian world has gotten it wrong when they first tried to track where the lost tribes went to. The Bible tells us in two places, where the land is and where the river is, where these tribes went to. But they switched the name of the land and the river. So the tribes never went to where we think they did. But some Jewish researchers have gone to the place that the Bible says. There's an ethnic group 50 million strong. Their tribes have Israelite names like Rabbani for Reuben, Levani for Levi, Shinwari for Simeon. The biggest tribe is Ephridi, which we think is Ephraim. And recently, some researchers, some geneticists have tested their DNA and said, you guys don't have the right DNA. You can't be Israelites. But then I think I'm the only Mormon who was paying attention. I went and found out that Joseph Smith, whom we know to be an Ephraimite through Revelation, has the same Y chromosome DNA as the men in the largest tribe, the Ephrites, who we think is Ephraim. And so if these Israelite tribes are really Israelites, then there's a way that it forms one of the most awesome, cool, new evidences for the Book of Mormon itself. Not that we need evidence to know that the Book of Mormon is true, other than praying and getting a testimony. And so next year, I want to take the Nephite Explorer TV show. If you've ever seen that show on KJazz on Sundays, we want to go to the other side of the planet, mix it up with the dust and the camels, and meet our brethren in the tribe of Ephraim and in the house of Israel. And so one of the things we're doing is trying to get more advertising on the TV show. If any one of you knows somebody who advertises on the TV, please throw them my way so we can get more advertising. And as well, if you'd like to see the DVD I've done about this research, I'm selling them for $10 a piece here in the back. Enjoy the rest of the evening.
Okay, as usual, we just need some donations to cover the room cost. It's $35, so if everybody put in a few dollars, we can cover that. And we're going to go ahead and get started. I'll say a prayer, and then we will hear from Hans Anderson. Father in heaven, we are thankful to be gathered here today among friends and like-minded individuals. We thank you for the messages that Hans and Jack have prepared for us, and ask that the Spirit will be here with us to open our understanding, to enlighten us, and to help us to learn more and to understand things that we can apply in our lives. And we pray for these things and for thy Spirit in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
I checked. I've got $7. I just got back from Mexico, and I couldn't believe all the people I was tipping with $1 bills, and I made so many people happy, and now he wants two more. But I've got it. I'm going to help. I'm going to contribute. One of my favorite heroes is Joseph Smith. I'm so happy I'm in a place where I was exposed to him and his teachings, the things that he brought back. When you spend a week among a bunch of people who know almost absolutely nothing, can you imagine going into a city of 200,000 people and you attend a ward that has fewer than 100 people in it, and not a one of them can even play the piano. And you sit there for an hour and you don't understand more than a couple of words the whole hour. Christo and Joseph Smith and amen. But the same spirit was there that you find up here. A lot of good people. Well, you and I are taught as LDS people. I was going to try and do a PowerPoint here, but I got the wrong connection for this computer to this, or from this to this. So you're going to have to pay attention and blow this up in your minds. This is section 98. I didn't have the right cord. This won't plug into this. I had a different laptop last time. So, hey, if you've got a, that wouldn't hurt because what I've got in here is black and white, and this is all, it's all here black and white. But anyway, Joseph Smith, he taught us, and that law of the land, which is constitutional, befriending that law, pertains to laws of man, and more or less than this cometh of evil. And that's a good statement, whatever's more or less than this cometh of evil. But what you and I run into is what's constitutional and what's evil. Isn't it amazing? You going to try and do that? Holy cow. Who says saying your prayers and paying your tithing doesn't work? Hey, do you want to try and do this too? I mean, you're obviously smarter than me, and you have better equipment than me. Yeah, if you can figure out how to do this. I got friends everywhere, and I don't even know these people.
Fans everywhere.
Yeah, they're blowing to... Yeah, you keep doing it. And talking about socialism... This is a drawing. I've got a son who graduated in art, but he couldn't make a living, so now he's an attorney. But which wasn't much of a promotion, but I guess in the eternal scheme of things. But here's a drawing he did for me. He says, of course, this is two brethren talking to each other in priesthood meeting. It says, of course I believe in following the prophet, but he ought to keep his mouth shut about socialism. Have you ever run into that? The spirit of it? Of course I believe in following him, but he ought to keep his mouth shut. Man, I'm getting all kinds of help here. This.
Can we move this over there?
Hey, you do it. And I got enough to give each of you a dollar, too. Yeah, taxi drivers, I tell you. Well, if you get that going, I don't care if you get this whole thing, a bucket of water on it. Here, let me take it. I'm going to be using it. I went down there to Mexico, and I was going through the jungles and just having a great time riding mules and doing zip lines, you know, going down to the jungle. And there's this guy, one of our guides, he was a returned missionary, and he thought he'd have some fun. So he hooked me onto one of these zip lines and went down several hundred feet, you know, and I said, I don't want to go down upside down. I'll lose my glasses. He said, okay, just hang down there and put your foot up here and your foot up here. And he gave me a push, and I got swinging down through this jungle. He was having the biggest time of his life laughing at me. Yeah, we had a good time. Well, this idea of what does a prophet know and how do you know when to follow him is a real problem in a lot of people's minds. And I've been taught things you and I have been taught. You don't know this man. That's Isaac Haight, or Isaac Hoyt. He was the first president of the United Order down in Orderville. He's my great-grandfather. He was a believer in sharing the wealth. He got a letter from Brigham Young that said, you have got to quit allowing so many people to come into the United Order. The analogy he used is, they're going to sink your boat. They're going to sink it. You're letting too many people in to participate in the United Order. But he was a believer. He was a believer in sharing the wealth. He thought that if they did it right with enough people, other people would join them, and that it would grow. And this idea of sharing the wealth would be a religious experience for people. In fact, his third wife had had a baby, and he was up the canyon running the dairy and the sawmill. He'd go up there and stay for a week, and they rode up the canyon to tell him, hey, your wife, your little baby's dying. You need to get down there. And so he was racing down the canyon. They didn't have streetlights back in those days. The horse tripped, and he died. And, well, he didn't die for a week. Had serious internal injuries. Went through a lot of pain for a week. But his last words were, I've laid the foundation. He was a believer in sharing the wealth. And he believed he could convert other people to it. Now, he believed in Brigham Young, who had sent his nephew over there to set it up down there in just south of the United Order, or of Orderville, about a mile and a half. And but he was a believer in sharing the wealth. You read some of the Order's notes, they talked about socialism, they talked about communism. Like they had set this thing up. A little confusion on the terminology. This is before the Russian Revolution. We found out what communism was really about. Boy, you're really going to save me. I got a new computer out of this too, huh? All for a dollar. Tell you. Worth every penny. Worth every penny. Anyway, they had a vote down there just south of Orderville about setting up the United Order. And they asked all these people if they wanted to join. And a whole bunch of them joined. A year later, when they moved up the canyon, they got rebaptized into the United Order, where they made commitments. Brigham Young sent them a list, I think 13, 14 things. These are things you're willing to do as joiners of the United Order. It's kind of like reading an Alamo. You ready to carry one another's burdens, help each other, care about your brother? That's the type of a thing that they were asked to do. And if you had a blow up of this next one, which you can't see this one, but this is the same picture, only there are some bayonets and some rifles and some bomb throwers when they're asking people to raise their hands. And that was not Israel Hoyt. This is what a socialist would do, though. He would say, do you want to join? And then he'd say, you will join. But these were not that kind of people. And one of the reasons that what happened at Orderville, why it lasted longer than anywhere else, is when they first set it up, it had a lot of problems. And a new bishop came down. He was on the run from the federal government. His name was Bishop Spencer. He had killed a federal agent up in Salt Lake who was harvesting Mormon cattle to feed the federal troops. And his bishop killed him. And so Brigham Young sent him down there, and he became the new bishop for the United Order. But he saw this trouble that they were having, those who wanted to share and those who didn't want to share. He saw that problem. And so he said, those of you that want to live the United Order, why don't we go up what they call the Long Canyon down there, about a mile and a half, and we'll set up a whole new community. And almost all those people were broke. But they had faith, they had spirit, they wanted to work. And so that's what they did. They had seven directors. They laid a whole new town out. The church owned every single thing in that town. Nobody owned anything. You worked. You got paid. Sometimes in script. I've got some copies of the old tithing records down there. See my grandma paying two chickens for tithing. It's funny to see, you know, a dozen eggs, 10 cents, and see the order, you know, how they kept track of these books. They wrote back in those days a lot better than I do, but they had these nice, fancy ways. They kept track, people who worked, people who didn't work. They kept track of, like, the men are paid $1.50, the women 75 cents a day, the kids 25 cents to work, and they charge you so much a day or so much a month for your housing and so forth. It was really neat. Are you figuring me out? It's dated 1/24/2014. Be right near the top. That's it. You found me. This is getting better yet. If you go back, I was down there. You can see the old records down there. There's a restaurant down there that has these old records. I found a what was a second cousin twice removed or something. She was a descendant of the first wife, and I was a descendant of the second wife, and went to church down there, found I was related to three-fourths of the people in that city, that little town, talking to them. You related to Israel Hoyt? Well, yeah, through Hannah, you know. Through they still know each other. But that those people, they sometimes called it socialism, sometimes even called it communism, but they wanted to help each other. And that's where we get into trouble today, is we don't know the difference. I'm on a city council with a bunch of very good people. Every one of them say their prayers and pay their tithing, and they could say as many nice things about this man as I can. But when it comes to socialism, we part ways. We part ways. Because their understanding of the proper role of government is far different from my understanding of the proper role of government. And yet they'd be just as proud to have Israel Hoyt as their great-grandfather as I am, if they had him, thinking that he was a believer. He understood. He loved people. He cared about them. Hey, brother, you're almost there. You got my first picture up. Except it's not. He's got a nice picture of Joseph Smith up here. That is a nice picture, isn't it? Well, here's what I wanted to hit. Go after next. City government. I'm on the Orem City Council. I deal with stuff all the time. I've spent the last 2 days with what we call retreats, where you spend all day with your fellow city councilman, and you talk about things you want to accomplish during the next year. You know what was the number one thing they wanted on the city council? Well, that was what was in their hearts. But let me tell you what they said they wanted. They wanted harmony. They wanted harmony. Who? Well, I was going to ask you, do you live in Orem?
Yes, sir.
Do you? Who do you think is the primary cause of disharmony in almost all our city council meetings? They're all trying to convert me. They want harmony. And they passed out a little 94-page book for all of us to read before we came to the meeting, and it was about dealing with change. Have you ever heard of Who Moved My Cheese? Any of you ever read that one? Hem and Haw. And anyway, I wasn't saying much. Most of them were saying things, and I knew where this was going. It was 2 days dedicated to, well, anyway. But finally, the city manager called on me and said, well, Hans, you haven't said much. What do you think? And I said, well, I said, when I read this and got ready for this meeting, I said, you know who Hem and Haw are? They're two people who are trying to find cheese, because the cheese station has completely run out of cheese. And Hem wants to keep going back to the same place to get his cheese. And he will not give it up. And Haw finally realizes there's no cheese there. And so they got to go through the maze and find another place to find cheese. And so that's a little background information, but the Hem wouldn't leave, Haw did leave to go try and find other cheese. And Haw eventually finds another beautiful place to gather up cheese. And I said, now, I said, I like this, but I said, here's the difference of opinion. You think I'm Hem, and I think you're Hem. And you think I'm Haw, and I think you're Haw. And I said, and that's why we've had so many 6-1 votes. You want harmony, but my idea of harmony and your idea of harmony are two different things, because I've got my set of principles. And I said, to me, utopia, most of you don't know what utopia is, but our city's in debt $51 million for a government internet service. We have fewer than 3,000 members. To me, that's just plain old socialism. And I said, we've had 6 or 7-0 votes until last year when I was the first one to vote against it. Haven't been there long enough to vote against all the other times. But I said, we had 6-1 votes because you all want to keep going in that same room. You think there's cheese in there, or there's utopia, and there's something good in there, and I don't. So you're a Hem standing here, and I'm a Haw out looking for something better. but it's socialism. It's just plain socialism. And these are all good saints, but they're confused about the proper role of government. They think the government ought to be providing all these things. Okay, now these are all good people, but what I want you to do, using my little socialism in Orem sheet here, I've got city government. We know what the Constitution says. You don't put up any streets in the old Constitution, do you? The closest thing to socialism in the old Constitution was U.S. Post Office. And they meant well with that, but we've seen how well it does. It can't compete. Anywhere government has to compete, there's a colossal failure that takes place. And anywhere it's going to compete, it's going to fail. But anyway, I'm on a city council. You probably all live in cities, or you have. And city government, we provide certain things for the taxpayers. One of them is streets. How many of you think that the city ought to take care of streets? Now, I got to be a few of you in here. Come on, you got to bite. You can't just... Okay, everybody's hand go up. Everybody leave the streets, don't you? Okay, that's better. I can't have a crowd that smart. You're not supposed to figure this out that soon. How many of you think the city government ought to be providing sewers? Sewer lines. Yeah, we got to have sewers, don't we? Someone's got to do it. We can't have 90,000 sewer lines running down the street, can we? That's not going to work, is it? Everybody got their own private sewer line. I've used those. I remember when my dad first moved me to Orem, so he put me where I could milk a cow out on a farm. We had a laterals that went down. You know, we weren't hooked up to city sewer. We were down the hill a ways on a 15-acre farm. The city's trying to hook us up. And they really worked at figuring out how to hook us up, but they just could not figure out how to run that sewer uphill for about 300 yards. They were trying to figure it out, though. Had to figure out how to dig a hole that deep for 300 yards when the hill's going like this. Well, they finally gave up and said, okay, we're not going to make you hook up after all. But they wanted us to. We got a pass. Okay, how many of you think believe in libraries provided by the city? Okay. Our library costs $185 per family in Orem City.
Per year.
That's our annual cost for our library. If you go check, yours is probably something similar. Although ours is probably a little nicer and a little bigger than yours. Pardon? 50? We're going to even add a big addition to ours. We were talking about it yesterday. Another 23,000 square foot addition. But I did not mean to work you guys like this, and I've had more than a dollar a piece. I'd sure give it to you. Well, we have a nice library. And how many of you believe cities ought to provide libraries? Got a few fewer hands, but anyway, that's one of the services that we provide over at Orem City, $185 per family per year. How about parks? How many of you think we ought to have parks? Yeah, parks, that's okay. My great-grandfather, when they were laying out Orderville, they had a center, which was like kind of like a public park, you know, and they laid it out there. Of course, the church owned it, and everybody knew that, but they had a town square, a center there, and flagpole in the middle of it. They had one. How about swimming pools? Anyone think cities ought to... What? Orem City has a real nice indoor pool, a real nice outdoor pool. And we're just in the process of spending another $4 million on another indoor pool. We're going to add to our rec center. And you people don't believe? Good heavens. Hey, you gave up on my antique, didn't you? If I hadn't spent $20,000 trying to get some friends elected city council last year, I would have bought a new one like yours. I'm still resurrecting my old antique. Can you move that thing? Let's go up to socialism in Orem if you can get there. It's before that. I'm going to buy a new one. I can see this is bad news, and I got people, your kind of minds can't fix me. So that's the one right there. Okay. Hey, how do you push? Which button do you push? This one here? Okay, well, these are things. How many think that Orem City ought to provide drinking water? Good, clean drinking water to drink. All right, I got more hands on that. Thank you. Yeah, Brigham Young, when he came out here, he said, water is so rare that nobody's going to own it. We're going to spread it out among the farmers, and he wouldn't let anybody get a monopoly on water, so to speak. How about sports fields? We've got some of the nicest sports fields in this whole state. They come there, they hold the annual softball championships in Orem because we've got so many good fields. How many believe that Orem City ought to be doing that? Man, we got one hand on that one. Okay. Okay. Storytelling Festival. Any of you ever been to the Orem City Storytelling Festival up the canyon? Nice, isn't it? Oh, they're good. They're great. I love to go up there. I drive golf carts and haul people around. You know, the elderly and so forth, they let the city council go up there, and the city attorney's there. You want to meet the city officials, you go up there, up the canyon when we're doing that, and you get to meet all the city officials, me included, driving golf carts. We're there to help. Yes?
So is the question, are these good fields that we would like in our community, or is the question, we want our government to pay for
the city to pay for the property tax? Well, this is the very problem that I've run into. I've spent 2 days with some of the finest people on earth, and we're discussing these various things. Not like this, though. You and I are discussing right or wrong. They're just discussing cost and is this good for the city. That's the problem. They're understanding what Joseph Smith said and and what the United Order means, and what we ought to share is it's confusing. It's really confusing. Garbage collection, should cities be involved in that? Recycling. Maybe, maybe not. We actually have we've contracted with a private company to do our garbage collection, and they also contracted with another group to recycle. We did this trick. We wanted to have more garbage cans. This is another one of my 6-1 votes. We wanted more garbage cans for recycling. And everybody thought it was a great idea. And here's how they decided to do it. We're going to sign up everybody in this city. Every house is going to have a blue recycled garbage can unless they call the city and say, I don't want it. You're going to get to opt out if you're smart enough to do it. And I said to them, I've got a 92-year-old mother. She's going to have a blue garbage can sitting out in front of her house, not wondering, knowing how it got there because she doesn't read the insert in her utility bill. Well, it was still a 6-1 vote. So they got 7,700 new garbage can people signed up on one day. And they hadn't, well, anyway, that's another problem. How many of you think that the government ought to provide internet? Don't you think they ought to have that? No buyers on that one? Our city has $51 million tied up in providing internet to the people in our city. Yeah. We just spent hours over the last 2 days discussing putting a $40 per month fee on the citizens of Orem per house to finish building out. Isn't that a nice $9 word, building it out? It just gets me excited when I hear it, you know. It'll provide internet for everybody in the city, and it's only going to cost $40 per house per month. And there are people on my city council who are going to vote for it. I stood up when you need to go to these meetings and watch the guy with the can of, what do they call it, pink paint? You know how they start glossing over your glasses so everything looks good? Rosy, that's the word I'm looking for. Rose-colored glasses. Well, they were starting to get thick, you know. And I raised my hand and I said, I'll do another referendum. Yes, we'll do another one. Yeah.
You know, with this federal spending, it's astronomical how
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things, another one of my 6-1 votes that happened December 10th. They did a no-bid contract for a garbage service. And I said, no, we got to have private, because two cities actually looked into it, found they could do it cheaper than going to the government one. And our city just, everybody raised their hands but me, and I said, no, we need to bid this. Yes. That they sign up? Well, see, this is one of the roll of the dice problems you get with the government doing anything. Your system sounds pretty good. Sounds like it'd work. Provo, they've spent just over $50 million to get 100% of their city wired. They couldn't make it work. They sold it for $1. They were kind of like yours. They had their own city, had their own city system, and they did the whole city, and they sold it for $1, and they kept the unpaid balance, about $31 million in debt. Google didn't take the debt. They walked away. So now my city, just to give you another cutesy, my city is in debt $51 million. They have less than 40% of the city wired. Provo, 20% bigger city, they wired their whole city for $50 million. We're just under 40% wired, and we've spent $51 million. Now you say your city's working, but I like to tell people only in government can you have colossal waste like that. Private enterprise would take out who's going to provide the best service. Sound like you found some people that'll do it. Now, probably private enterprise, I'd still go for them, because I'm not willing to roll the dice and say, you know, I think we can do it, because we've already proven we can. Yes?
It's not a choice, though, between whether private enterprise is cheap.
Yeah, Bart came and did a presentation to our city council and about, you know, the train. This is back before the train location there in Orem was going, and about the buses and how it was all going to connect, you know, and how great it was going to be. And I raised my hand and I said, can you tell me how much the fares pay for of the cost, you know, of what you're doing? Anybody want to guess? It's 20% of the operating costs. The operating costs. That means they don't contribute a dime for a bus. The trucks that go around and fix them, the line that they laid, the trains that run around, the cars you see running around that are hooked onto it, 20% of the guy driving it, his salary, and 20% of the gas and repairs on all that system is all that the fares pay for. That's it. It is another colossal failure. That's what government does. Christensen? Yeah, eventually it does. Eventually that's what's happened, because it can't compete. It always fails. Well, you've said it. You've said it very well. You've said it very well. Government, when it goes there, it's going to lead to problems. It violates conscience, violates your sense of right and wrong. And what happens when people like you and me start speaking up? We get like, what's his name on the tire? Why seest this man and hear him revile against his people, against our law? He just spoke about the corruptness of the law. What do they want to do to that man? Better remember? They wanted to kill him. He'd spoken about their law. That's not a good thing. Pardon?
Against Snowden.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want the people to know what's going on. Here's another one. When the Lord went down and lifted, I think, the 26 cities that he had destroyed, thrown them into the depths of the sea, or covered them up with mountains, or dug a hole for them or something, when he talked about the city of Jacob, Ugath, their wickedness, which was above the wickedness of the whole earth, to destroy the peace of my people and the government of the land. So their wicked king of this city, he ruined their government, and so they said, this is the greatest wickedness of all. Destroyed the peace above all the wickedness of the whole earth. And this is where we are told one of the reasons we're given the Book of Mormon. We read about their history, read about their government. Here's when we get into Moroni. The recounting of the history of this people is unnecessary because you know it. This is the people marched steadily towards their fullness of iniquity. Finally, there had come to all the people the same wickedness that was among the Jaredites, as if they would perish, likened to the Jaredites. This is out of a book I got for my 18th birthday. Jerry Wynn Clark, Stand Fast by Our Constitution. You, probably a lot of you have it too. It's about that thick, a green one. My dad wanted to teach me. We got this book because they fouled up, and the Lord wants to let you see the parallels. That's why we have it. It's not just bad luck. It's their... let's see. Here's one. This brag moment. This is a lady I taught the gospel to. She used to be a communist. Her parents were communists. This is her husband. He swam across the river and was being shot at. Could have been by her dad, who was a guard, who was supposed to keep people from escaping. He was a 13-year-old kid. Over 20 people tried to escape. He was the only one that got across the river. Here's a guy who spent 14 years and 3 months in a communist prison camp in Laos building roads. After we lost the Vietnam War and came home, we left a lot of people behind that fought with us. They wanted their freedom just like we do. Well, we lost, we left, and so people like him end up staying behind. This lady here spent 3 days, night and day, and no sleep, going through the jungle with four of her kids, these are two of them, getting out of Laos and getting down by the river and then crossing it at night. For these people, what we're doing is tragic. This lady here, back during the election here, we're talking, this is before Obama was elected the first time, and she said, people are so stupid. Except I can't do her accent. But but she says she'd heard all this before. She'd heard it all before. She said, how can you Americans do this? I said, we won't elect him. We're not that stupid, you know. But it was so funny. This guy here, he's been in the citizen. He came over here in, I think it was 88, 89. He got out of jail. And first time in his life he ever voted in this country was to vote against Obama. And I used to tell him, I worried about our country. He said, oh, never happened in America. Never happened in America. And he said, I got to go vote against that man. I was over cleaning the toilets in the church with his son here, and he started to laugh, and he said, Dad went down to vote. I said, really? He did? Because before I tried to get him voting, he wouldn't vote. He didn't care to vote. Nothing's going to go wrong with this country. He said, yeah, I went down there to vote, but he didn't realize he had to register to vote because he became a citizen in another state and he'd been here for years and hadn't registered to vote. But he wanted to vote against Obama because he recognized the promise of something for nothing, the redistribution of wealth, socialism. He knew it. He spent 14 years in jail because he fought it. And so these people that... This one, who had been a communist, whose dad was an active communist, she told me one day when I was talking to her about her father, she said how he came home one day and was talking to his family, and he said, these are worse. These are worse than the people that he had spent years fighting in the jungle. They're going to redistribute the wealth. And he found out all he did was redistribute the wealth to the people on top again. Yeah. These are Laotians. These are Laotians. Yeah, those are all Laotians. They fought, they were part of the Laotian army. Well, he was. This kid and his other brothers and the others left because when they went to school, they were treated so poorly because their dad had been an officer. But these people knew exactly what they're against. Well, I got to keep moving here. This is a letter. One of the nice things I got to do after my dad died was go through about 50,000 pages of stuff. And I just had more fun. My dad and President Benson were best buds. And I saw more stuff in there, you know, going through these letters. It's so neat. You hear about the right-wingers all getting beat up by their bishop or their stake president, you know, or some church leader calls them in for doing something stupid. But anyway, I saw it went through a pile of letters between President Benson and my father. They were best friends. One of them still has President Benson's signature on it. I am a great believer in the Book of Mormon, feel strong what it meant for our day and time. I have said to many people that a person will come better, be better informed regarding what is happening in the world today by reading the Book of Mormon and all the magazines and newspapers combined. That's a personal letter to my daddy. Here this is just a repeat of what we went through before. The only difference here on the proper role of government, can you draw a line? Is I threw in health and housing, retirement, welfare, police, firemen, paramedics, ambulances. And up here I've got the storytelling festival, swimming pool, education, government. This is a real hodgepodge of things that people need in their life. But the problem we've got is most people cannot draw a line between what the government ought to do and what it can do. And so when we have our discussions in city council, that's what we get involved in. Should we be doing this? And I can't convince them on the proper role of government line because most of them don't have any use for my dad's best friend, Ezra Taft Benson. But this is where teaching correct principles to your friends and your children makes a difference. We have to have an Orem swimming pool. We got two. And by the end of this year, we'll have a third one. Just exactly what I voted against. But we're going to have it. But you and I, when I put up this list, you know, the library, the pool, street, sewer, water, there's some things that you, if you know the proper role of government, and you've taught your children this, you taught your neighbors this, there's some things that you learn to endure. You say, yeah, that's crossing the line, but I guess I can live with it. I have to endure it. I can't go to sleep every night because... and cry myself to sleep because, darn, they spend $185 per family on the library. I really can't fix that. I've learned I have to endure that. What I wish my other city councilmen would do this also, but what they've done is they've gone a step further. They've embraced it, and they want to expand it. You can see a picture of the old Orem City Library when it cost the city nothing. It was run by volunteers. It was right across the street from the CIRA. Somebody had contributed a fairly large home. People brought books in. Didn't cost the city one thin dime. It was run by volunteers. It worked out of the CIRA. And now it became from we endure a little bit. You've seen the old thing, pity, endure, embrace. Well, that's the way most government works. That's the way most socialism works. It spreads. Start out some little tiny thing, and pretty soon it takes over. But that's most elected officials cannot draw a line. And often it's not a matter of drawing a line. It's figuring out we can endure or are we going to embrace it. Go ahead. What's your question? When you run for city council, don't talk like that. Go ahead. Well, I've thought that for years. I like to tell people, I like to tell God's running this place, not me, because I'd do it a whole lot different. I'd give them a quick fair trial and then hang them. You know, I'd fix a lot of things, but he's got his own timetable. Okay, here's one I used last time I spoke here. This is a stepson out collecting fast offerings. He's sent by the bishop. He would have been just a great fellow standing there next to Israel Hoyt back when they did the United Order out looking for contributions. And here's a picture of him again with a little Photoshop work. He's out for the same stuff, you know, to help people. But he's not going to have a question in his mind. Are they going to give a nickel or a dime or a dollar? Or is it going to be $40? And he's there to make sure that you participate in socialism. And it's not going to be your choice. He's going to help you out. This is the same thing goes on in our cities, states, federal government. You used to have, back in 1900, 92% of the federal government went for the Interior, Defense, Justice. Now we're down to 21% in 98. It's down to even less than that now. But that's what happens when socialism takes over. Like when we have our city council meeting, we got, you know, so much for the library and so much for the parks and recreation and all this stuff. And the first thing they say is, we're going to have to let the police go if you don't raise our budget, you know. You know, they don't touch all the bad stuff, but we got to fire the firemen, and we can't hire new policemen, and we can't replace their oxygen jackets and all this other stuff. The same thing happens in city government. You get too many people at the table. You know what you can do when you can spend somebody else's money? You can have a field day. No, you'd have to change the law to do that. Dave, what you got? We borrow money. Well, Wells Fargo Bank's one of our big ones. Zions Bank is another one. Oh, it's about, I think, 10 million, something like that. We get about 17 from sales tax, about 15 million from franchise taxes. Oh, yeah, schools are, but that's got nothing to do with our city, though. That's another whole socialist pot. Well, I'm going to run out of time here. Let's get three more questions, and I'll wrap up. Go ahead. Isn't that neat? You ought to be on the Orem City Council, and we'd have another voice. You know what we talk about on the Orem City Council? The law says we can borrow another $300 million. We have a credit card that we haven't even touched yet. And it is a big son of a gun. Who else had a question? You said in the last election, I do stuff like that, but it's not very popular. Orem City's debt's gone up 430%, while the federal government's gone up 220% in the last 15 years. We can spend, and we can borrow with the best of them. We've got 8 new parks in Orem in the last 10 years. We'll have another one by the end of this year. Well, I'm gonna finish up here. Here's a deal I ran, the Holy Bible versus the Communist Manifesto. Here's some quotes out of the Manifesto, and here's some quotes out of the Bible. And unless you can tell the difference, what you're embracing or what you're enduring, you could get confused. A lot of people do. There's James Madison. When he was working on the Constitution, but back before he had it to give us, one of his quotes I like to use, the nearer the crisis approaches, the more I tremble for the issue. That's when he was trying to get our Constitution adopted. Here's where some of our best people go back and forth. Patrick Henry wanted a bill to tax people for religion. And on the other side of the issue in Virginia was James Madison, who said, we're not going to do that. So anyway, what I'm saying is you've got some good people. There's Enzio Bush talking about when he was out gathering money for the Nazis. And he talked about they did it on Sunday. And those who didn't want to collect were to be re-educated. I mean, those who didn't want to pay. He didn't carry a gun, but he did keep a list of those who didn't give to the poor. He didn't carry a gun like my stepson did there. Well, anyway, I'm going to quit. There's Mr. No. It's a trophy they gave my father for voting against more legislation than anybody in the history of the state legislature. And I'm going to get mine for Orem. I'm going to get mine for Orem.